lending quality chat and insightful comment for the 21st century. You're listening to the Midweek Drive.
It's wonderful to see that we're back to normal high standards when it comes to the Richard Fitzwilliams film review slot, because obviously after last week, where, as you know, Pieces of a Woman, 4 out of 10 from me, I was actually very impressed to find that he'd actually selected a movie this week which features not only Henry Cavill, but also music by Daniel Pemberton. Both key aspects, of course, of Guy Ritchie's The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is, as Richard is well aware, an unsung classic, which clearly is actually there and taps into Enola Holmes as well. In addition to that, we've also got the joys and delights of the wondrous world of Wonder Woman 84 or WW84? What are the two things? Which actually Robin Pierce has also seen and reviewed. So it'd be intriguing to see where Richard goes on this, which I think is not necessarily a masterpiece. It's more a flawed masterpiece. I scored it at 6.7. You know, not as high as I'll say Enola Holmes got from me, which probably could reach even a 9. But there we are. Yaz, just before we actually go, we welcome Yasmin de Graaf. Yaz, have you actually seen either WW84 or Enola Holmes?
I haven't, but I do plan on seeing WW84.
Right. Okay. So there we are, Richard. You could be responsible now, as indeed could Robin Pierce. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Hello, for Robin. Deciding where people actually go. Will they go WW84? Will they go Enola Holmes? Both of which I would state infinitely better than Pieces of a Woman. But there we are. Off you go.
Well, Alex, I'm going to begin with Wonder Woman because this is obviously a tremendously popular movie. And of course, this franchise of the superhero, I mean, we know how well Marvel's movies do. And we know very well also that Wonder Woman has done stunningly well, Wonder Woman 1984, that is, online. I have to say that I was looking forward to this movie enormously, and the reason for that was that I much enjoyed the first Wonder Woman, and I mean that was set partly in ancient Greece, or should I say Themyscira, where Diana, played by Gal Gadot, hails from, and of course partly during the First World War. And I mean, it combines special effects with this rather fascinating idea, which I think is a very, very good one, of linking to various facts in history and playing around with historical facts, obviously, but doing so very, very entertainingly. Now, with Wonder Woman 1984, I would say that it's the best opening ever in a superhero movie that I've seen. I mean, absolutely stunning visuals. It's set on Themyscira, and it's a form of Olympiad. And we meet Diana Prince when very young, taking part in this athletic event, and she wins, but it's a shortcut, and so her victory is not acknowledged. And then we skip to 1984, where she's working at the Smithsonian, whilst, of course, also being a Wonder Woman on the choir. Now, I have to say that one thing that struck me with this movie was very, very impressive, and that was the colours. It was a stunning recreation of the 1980s, and I mean, whether you're looking at meet again. You have to, I would say that if you see this movie without knowing the first Wonder Woman, you will get very, very confused as to who Steve Trevor is, played by Chris Pine and the great love of Diana's life, Wonder Woman's great passion, and inhabiting someone else's body. I have to say that this is a rather confusing aspect to the movie, but if you are aware of it, and if indeed you go along with it, you'll find that the music is fascinating. We see Steve's tour of Washington, which, putting it mildly, is very different to what he remembers. You've got them up in the clouds in an aircraft, where, of course, he's a pilot. And you have a very, very spectacular movie, a movie that's spectacular, but is it going to be a spectacular success? Or alternatively, is it entertaining for much of the first hour, but is it actually riding for a fall? Now, this, unfortunately, is what, so far as I was concerned, the movie did to me. Firstly, it has a bad villain. The villain is indeed bad when it comes to business, and he needs the Dream Stone, which can work magical powers if you make a wish. Max Lord, played by Pedro Pascal, hangs around the Smithsonian and indeed is much lusted after by Barbara, played by Kristen Wiig, who metamorphoses into a fascinating, or less fascinating as far as I was concerned, creature called Cheetah towards the end of the movie, she's a geologist at the Smithsonian originally. Now, without going through the entire plot, which I wouldn't do because it would involve spoilers, but also it is far, far too complicated, I have to make the point, Alex, I'm afraid, that this movie is far, far too long. Firstly, you have to know the story or some of the story in the first movie. And secondly, I do wish that Patty Jenkins, who produces, who directs, and who writes the screenplay, marvelously versatile, with so much material here, visually, it's parts of it are sublime. I mean, especially in early scenes dealing with fashion. And also you have a very, very interesting musical score. That is, before we get into the cliched aspect of it, where you have the superheroes battling each other, Wonder Woman as Diana versus Cheetah and so forth, which tends to go on for about 10 minutes and which has, as always in these sort of franchises, very, very loud music. Now, I must emphasize that along with the first Wonder Woman, this deals with politics, and we have a priceless depiction of Ronald Reagan, reminding me of Gore Vidal's comment that he was a masterpiece of the embalmer's art. And I must say, that aspect of it is from time to time very funny. And Reagan, when the Dream Stone gives Max Lord these amazing powers, you then can make a wish and your wish can come true. So if you want all the nuclear weapons on the planet, or you want to be able to communicate around the world, Max can do it if Reagan allows him to. And of course, he has winning ways. But the trouble is, being possessed of these powers has an effect on his health and so forth. And I have to say, one of the reasons this movie didn't work for me, its length, its villain, and the way its plot developed. Whereas the first Wonder Woman, I thought was fantastic. It was colorful. It was imaginative, as this is in the first hour. It's in the second hour and a half that I really started to make my own wish. And that is, I'd have thrown the lasso of truth, which is one of the amazing characteristics that Wonder Woman has. She can use it. And my goodness me, they use it in the White House. They use it endlessly. And indeed, when she's battling Cheetah, she uses it to the extent where the music and indeed the use of the lasso of truth got very, very tedious. So you could say that, you know, I'm a bit out of it. I don't tend to go for these sort of movies. Black Panther was the big exception, but this had all the promise in the world. I loved its predecessor. And in the last hour or hour and a half, Alex, hour and a half of valuable time, despite a brilliant beginning, I frankly would give a thumbs up for the fans because they'll enjoy it, and we want to encourage everyone to see movies, and this one ought to have been seen on the large screen. But I'm afraid my wish, my lasso of truth,
Let's hold it there, because we've been joined by our very own Wonder Woman. I know this because she's actually twirled around in a wonderful Linda Carter way and magically transformed in all sorts of ways. It's Sarah Huntley. How are you, Sarah?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. Good to see you before.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Now, clearly, you are obviously catching part of Richard's review on that sort of basis. I'll come to you in a few seconds, but Yaz, if I can turn to your good self, obviously as Wonder Girl in many ways, really, for that sort of point of view, the sort of the natural sort of successor in that side of things. Yaz, does that say I'm going to shell out my £15 now to actually get that 48-hour access to watch it online, or is it a case of, oh dear, Richard's maybe sort of said it's controversial?
I think I would just get it to watch it. But now I'm quite curious to see what I'm going to do for the next hour and a half of the show.
Yeah,
I would say, yes, one thing I warn you, because I got caught and I don't want you to be caught. I put my $14.99, and I count my pennies, Alex, by the way, when I'm spending my time watching this, and then I paused it. Now, if you want to see the whole 2.5 hours, you won't have this problem, but when I tried to revisit it, I had to pay again, so I paid twice, and it wasn't.
Oh, no.
Well, Richard, that's surprising because normally you get a 48-hour grace period, but never mind. Yes. As I say, it is flawed. I'm giving it 6.7 out of 10 because there's an issue there which I think Robin will allude to in a few seconds, because I've also read Robin's review, which I must send to you, Richard, because it is a classic, and I'm pretty much in full agreement in this particular instance. It is flawed. There are issues with respect to if you actually had a female person, a female actor portraying Steve Trevor's role, and in terms of the body swap, wouldn't you have actually have had people in uproar about the sort of the woke culture being attacked in all sorts of things? Basically, you had date rape there, but that's a different line entirely. So, Robin, let's turn to your good self. You've heard Richard there, not a fan clearly. I scored it at 6.7 out of 10. Oh, no, 6 out of 10, probably. 6 out of 10, 6, 6, 7, thereabouts. Robin, where would you go?
Well, first of all, I mean, I listened with great interest to what Richard had to say, because I know that Richard wears his heart on his sleeve as far as films are concerned, and he is not a superhero film fan. I mean, those of you who can actually see me right now, you only have to look at the paraphernalia behind me to know I actually am. What I'm really amazed about, and to the point of speechlessness almost, is how much Richard's comments tally with my own on this particular movie. Because it's not a masterpiece. It's not even a flawed masterpiece. It's a flawed film that's actually not too bad, but has moments of pure bliss. For example, Wonder Woman riding down with her lasso on a bolt of lightning. Improbable, yes, but then again, we believe a woman can fly.
You've clearly never seen Sarah perform in Wimbledon on a daily basis.
I clearly need to. but there are also things that I just don't like. I mean, you, Alex, alluded to them with the body swap of Steve Trevor and a random stranger. And it's all a little bit uncomfortably date rapey for me. The actual dreamstone, where you can get whatever you want and put it in 18th culture where greed was good, and you obviously have Max Lord as a sort of Donald Trump at that time, Gordon Gekko sort of hybrid, wanting more, and more is never enough, and where will it all lead? I found that absolutely fascinating and appropriate. But the whole thing of a Dreamstone, I found after she's been basically storming the front line in World War One, this was a very different film. It was more lightweight. The fact that not everything was in a blue tint, apart from the Themyscira thing, you know, told us, you know, this is more vibrant, we're more upbeat, we're more comedic. But what worries me more than anything is the fact that there is, of course, a final resolution, but essentially, it involves no consequence at all. Evil is not really punished. And I thought, so is greed good? Is that what we're saying here? You can just, you know, reset everything at
it's
will?
Ambiguous. It's ambiguous. It's a reset button.
I don't understand either. I mean, Wonder Woman obviously remembered her dalliance with that young man. The young man, when he's back, bumps
innocent.
Into later on.
No idea at all.
Nothing of her. I mean, let me tell you, if I'd had a dalliance with Gal Gadot, I would want to remember it.
I
give it a 7 out of 10.
I do have to say, Gal Gadot is a colourful figure, but yeah. You didn't mention, for example, one thing. I mean, I agree about the rather bizarre ambiguity of the end. The problem with that is there's this character absolutely obsessed with greed.
You needed another half an hour, Richard. Should have gone to 3 hours as opposed to 2.5.
And linked with Gordon Gekko, apparently, at least in the mind of Patty Jenkins. But there is also the problem that instead of wondering what a scene symbolically meant, if you get terribly impatient, you're just longing for that scene, that episode, and climactically it goes on for such a long time, you really are longing for it to end. I mean,
Richard, I felt the same thing about Pieces of a Woman last week. It was just and that was just in the first 20 minutes of Pieces of a Woman. So, you know, that's all I shall say.
Can I just make one point to anybody who hasn't seen this film? I know it's the habit of many, many people to switch off as soon as the credits start.
Halfway
into the credit, there is a sting. Wait for it. It's worth it.
Features Linda Carter. That's all I shall say. Oh, no spoiler.
Richard, he's done it again.
I can only say that he's very mischievous, Robin, but he's also waiting. He's provoking us, and perhaps we should allow him to talk solo, Alex. I mean, I think we'd be very good at it.
Honestly, Richard, just to bear in mind that the original character of Maxwell Lord, of course, a wealthy businessman and entrepreneur responsible for organising the Justice League International. And I didn't really get that from the Mandalorian's interpretation in this particular episode. Anyway, you've heard Robin's piece, you've heard Richard's piece, yes. Are you still in that line of, yeah, what the hey, it's going to be 2.5 hours well spent for me?
I think now I'm just looking forward to listen to the music. But I'm quite curious to see, you know, what comes of the last part of it. I think I'm more excited for the end credits than the other hour and a half. I think I'm excited.
The soundtrack score is absolutely phenomenal. It's by Hans Zimmer, and it's bombastic. It's also quite wistful and dreamlike in places, to the extent that as soon as I had finished watching the film, I made sure that the order was placed for the soundtrack CD to add to my collection.
And we've already heard part of it at the start of this piece. We'll hear another piece of it now.
Thank you.
Sarah Huntley, Wonder Woman 84, before we move on to the next movie, is it one which you're thinking, I think that would be a treat for John, and I think Imogen would demonstrate sort of true appreciation of Gal Gadot in full force?
I think listening to my friend Richard, I have to say, it's going to be a no for me.
Well, there you go.
Well, I was looking forward to it, but one of the things I thought I would make, you know, I think the fans will greatly enjoy it, but it had so much potential, that opening sequence. I mean, it was absolutely mesmerizing.
What happens if you give total, complete control to Patty Jenkins. She was controlled in the first movie. She had total control in the second movie. What you've got is something which has divided fandom. But anyway, let us move on, because we have a movie now which actually scored higher than Wonder Woman. Again, available on Netflix. I thought it was pretty outstanding, even though I've also seen a website which has defined it as the evilest movie ever made, which I thought was strong. But it does feature, from Stranger Things, of course, Bobby Millie Brown, who in fact is producing wonderful sort of material for our good self. And indeed, he even has a producer credit on Enola Holmes. It's part of the Holmes mystery. There are gender issues there. You've got a whole range of aspects that come together in a woke culture. But overall, because of Bobby Millie Brown's input, I would go for a, well, maybe even 9 out of 10 for this, actually. It's number one so far. It's Enola Holmes. Richard, have you seen it as yet? Richard, you've obviously seen it. Robin, have you seen it as yet?
No, I haven't, I'm afraid.
Yes, Enola Holmes?
What am I missing?
Nope, I haven't seen it.
Sarah, Enola Holmes on Netflix?
Yeah, it's on my list to watch, actually.
On your list to watch. Okay, so Richard, I've given my quite unambiguous, righteous line. And as I say, music by Daniel Pemberton, featuring Henry Cavill, Napoleon Solo, superb incarnation in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Man of Steel, and, of course, The Witcher. And he's, of course, from Jersey. So where are you going to go with Enola Holmes, Richard?
Enola Holmes is a movie definitely to see. And I mean, this about it, it's one thing I think that we're probably all agreed on. And I would also bring Pieces of a Woman into this, Alex, because that first half hour, which gave the likes of me an insight into childbirth, which I must say, one might have read about it, but certainly I'd never seen anything like this. I mean, a woman's experience, I mean, we have Enola Holmes also about the brighter sister of Sherlock Holmes. We have Wonder Woman, we have the superwoman's talents celebrated by Patty Jenkins, of course. It so happens that Enola Holmes is directed by Harry Bradbeer, who of course is male, but it does celebrate. And this is what is happening so much more in movies now. Various aspects of female abilities, in this case, a brilliant, absolutely brilliant daughter of Eudoria Holmes, played by Helena Bonham Carter. And Enola, as you say, is played by the bewitching Millie Bobby Brown, who is absolutely delightful. Indeed, what I loved from the beginning of the movie, she takes us into her confidence, she talks to the camera, and we really feel as though we know her. She's been brought up for learning from chess to jiu-jitsu, truly remarkable upbringing, and suddenly she finds her mother disappears, so no Eudoria. Why is that? This is set in the Victorian era, and could it be something to do with the reform bill which is before the House of Lords and which will begin to give women certain rights? There are, as we know in a society of this sort, precious few. And we meet Enola's brothers. There is the reactionary Mycroft, played by Sam Cleflin, and also, as Alex has mentioned, Henry Cavill plays Sherlock. And Sherlock is already, he's renowned, he's made it already. But nonetheless, Enola is forever resourceful. She escapes, she's disguised as a boy, and she runs into young Viscount Tewkesbury, played by Louis Partridge, who I think will also make a few hearts go fluttering, as undoubtedly Millie Bobby Brown will. I mean, the two make a delightful pairing. And someone is trying to kill the young Viscount. Now, why is that and for what reason? Important to discover that the two of them keep running into each other when they get after they get to London. And so she visits the Tewkesbury estate to learn precisely what's going on. Now, Mycroft, her guardian, the elder brother of Sherlock, catches her and puts her in Miss Harrison's finishing school. And that from there, she escapes and she goes to Bellwether
Richard, Hall. Miss Harrison's finishing school is simply The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie by another name. It's literally writ large there. It's the creme de la creme. It is Fiona Shaw.
You're quite right. Did you see Fiona Shaw as Miss Brodie?
Of course.
At the National?
No.
It was a delightful experience. And here, of course, Shaw is exceptionally good. And I have to say, the whole joyous Victorian romp, the comedic aspect of this movie, the fact we also get stately homes and we get rather bizarre aristocrats and we get particularly monstrous villains in it, the whole thing is joyous. And so are the sets of London, so is the ambience, so is the humour. And it's a sort of movie that I found, I hadn't heard of it before. I thought that it had winning waves, and it's certainly got a cast that's absolutely marvellous. It includes Francis de la Tour as rather a monstrous dowager, and it includes wonderful sets of London. I mean, you could really, really enjoy this movie, and I certainly did, and I recommend it to everybody.
Personally, I don't feel that Bern Gornham, of course known to many for his role in Torchwood, has actually bettered his role on screen as Linthorne since he actually did Pacific Rim with Guillermo del Toro, another classic Bern Gornham incarnation there. I'd certainly rate it, but let's see. Yes, Richard obviously eulogising there, as might be expected from somebody who is in public relations with respect to the a variety of other key things, etc. Will you be persuaded to say it's on Netflix? I'm going to check out Enola Holmes.
Definitely. I think I'm ready to watch it like today.
There you go. Good stuff. Music by Daniel Pemberton, also wonderful. And everything, curiously, that I found fantastic about this movie was everything I actually loathed and detested about Pieces of a Woman, which, as I say, sadly, will be winning awards.
Honestly, Alex, honestly, how can you compare two movies that are so totally different that, in fact, comparison is
because they're both produced by Netflix. Sarah. They know the homes.
Yes,
and you have given birth, of course. So at the end of the day, you could say you've been through that whole process. You could watch Pieces of Woman and say, it's nothing like that at all.
Well, I don't remember much about it because I was just put out. So I suppose I copped out.
Lord, that would have helped the movie immeasurably. If they'd only used that line, that's all she needed. But no, the character insists on a home birth and takes the rest of the audience through it with her.
Yes, a bit gory. No, I have been a bit curious about Enola Holmes, and like Jazz, I think I'll watch it. The only thing I don't like is when people muck about with stories that are original stories to start with. So, but having said which, as an actress, that can be very interesting watching the actors when they're having to fill out other bits of the plot that haven't been explored because you don't see the uncle or the sister. But what connection is Enola Holmes's mother, played by Helen Bonner Carter, what connection is she to Sherlock Holmes?
Well, Sherlock is her son.
Oh, right.
Enola has the two elder brothers, her guardian, Mycroft, who's the reactionary and rather ferocious character, and Sherlock, played by Henry Cavill, is the younger brother, and he's already renowned. I mean, he's already regarded as the great detective. Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard is rather an entertaining character here, especially, and I'm sure Alex will agree, in his parting quip to Sherlock Holmes, which I will not reveal.
Why would I reveal it? You know, Richard, I never give spoilers away. It's absolutely against my religion. But in terms of the line, of course, Enola, Sarah, it's, if you spell it backwards, it spells alone. which is curious. And there are lots of little moments which you'd expect from Harry Bradbeer, as he actually directed and indeed was responsible for Fleabag, which was very popular, to have lots of moments to camera. There are several where Millie Bobby Brown actually has genuine laugh out loud moments. I defy anybody to watch the, particularly a sense, mini spoiler, where they say, what would you do when she turns to the audience? What would you do? It's wonderful.
I love it. Kind of, though you've got all the grandeur and the scenic feel of the Victorian times, I'm right, aren't I?
Edwardian, really. Edwardian. 1900.
So you that appeals to me. You've whetted my appetite there. I'm only laughing at this actress's name because I'm old enough to have read the Molly Mandy children's books, and every time you say it, I think I'm going to call her Millie Molly Mandy. Yeah. So sorry, that's me just laughing away that end. No, I think it sounds good.
What tips up to nine for me is that it even has a relative of Spike in there called Dash, who basically sort of responds to me in all sorts of ways, follows me everywhere in the same way. And I defy anybody not to shed a tear when Dash actually appears on screen.
And Francis de la Tour, who is always worth watching.
So. Francis de la Tour is always absolutely excellent. And so is Fiona Shaw. I mean, they're both excellent. I thought the whole thing was joyous, jubilant, it's very, very good fun, and you know exactly where you are. You can just put your feet up and you know, this is cinema's escapism.
Shockingly enough, it seems as though, rather like Mank, Richard and myself are almost in agreement with this, although I would say that Tewkesbury's entrance into the sequence, played by Louis Partridge, it's not safe, it's not clever, do not attempt to do it at home, and that particular carriage bag, unless it's Mary Poppins-esque, could never have actually held that particular body in that shape. But the listener is still keen to find out on saying, will Robin Pierce be moved into this more, again, another sort of genre-based aspect, Enola Holmes?
Absolutely, yes. I love Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I've read the stories. I don't recall that he ever had a sister, but yes, I'll definitely be watching this. I'm intrigued by the thought of Henry Cavill as Sherlock Holmes, how that's going to work. I do dearly wish that Alex would stop referencing that Man from U.N.C.L.E. film as being in any way good. I mean, just please stop it. You're just provoking me now.
He is as good as Sherlock Holmes as he was as Napoleon Solo. He's got that level of quality there.
Alex, I told you, and I'm so grateful to you, Robin, I told Alex about Man from U.N.C.L.E. years, it must be, ago. He keeps bringing it up as though it was some sort of movie we would want to
remember. It's the Lawrence of Arabia of Guy Ritchie's oeuvre.
I have the Man from U.N.C.L.E., the complete DVD set. I refuse to own that film in any format. If somebody gave me a Betamax of it, I would hand it back.
Armie Hammer, Henry Cavill.
Armie Hammer, the man who never really was the Lone Ranger. Come on, please. As to his playing Sherlock Holmes, Henry Cavill now, we all know, do we not, there is only one screen Sherlock Holmes, and that is Basil Rathbone.
Oh, Basil Rathbone was amazing.
I don't think Yaz will ever acknowledge Basil Rathbone, actually, I suspect. Yaz, black and white, different
long time ago, indeed.
Different world. Sarah as well, of course,
just
far too young.
Just to be clear, Yaz, it's before even my time.
Basil Rathbone. I've been brought up watching Basil Rathbone. I have to say, you see, when you're as old as us three, not you, Yaz, you do go back to those ones as being the pinnacle of the pineapple, as Mrs. Malaprop would say, of really how it should be, and his chiseled features and his rather gorgeous looking. Mm.
But then, you see, we found out Spock has a sister in Star Trek Discovery, so why shouldn't Sherlock Holmes in our new woke culture?
Spoiler again, I haven't watched Star Trek Discovery. What's wrong with you, man?
Does she have the ears, Alexis?
No, because she's an adopted step-sibling.
Oh, gosh, okay. Oh, right. It's all tempting us to watch for different reasons.
I think so, yeah. Yes. Human brought up as Vulcan as Spock's sister. He kept quiet about it for understandable reasons.
Do you think her mother read the book, going back to childbirth, Dr. Spock? Was it Dr. Spock or Dr.
There was
Spock?
A Dr. Spock, indeed. And he would also have actually said Pieces of a Woman was far too long and should have been cut down by at least 40 minutes. and add that 40 minutes onto Wonder Woman 84, results happiness. And now, Sir Robin.
The result, 3 hours and 10 minutes, if you added 40 minutes onto it, the result, I'm afraid, was very, very mixed. But Wonder Woman 1984 should have been really spectacular. They had so much talent there. There was the music, which, Robin's discussed. There were the art. Direction. I mean, the colours, that side of it was fine. And the whole concept of also using the Cold War, I mean, that should have worked much better than it did.
And tragically, only one major hit from the 80s, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, features on the soundtrack. So much great 80s music there. They didn't actually allude to it at all. And you might have even thought that why the 80s? Why not just go back to the 70s where you could have a whole different sort of world on the whole system? But never mind.
Well, perhaps Wonder Woman will.
I think that between us, Richard, we've hit on, maybe unwittingly, I don't know, but we've hit on the biggest fault in Wonder Woman 84 is that the result is less than the sum of its parts.
Very, very sadly, I agree with you. And I know that these movies are your particular interest, and I was looking forward to it. And I do go along with me with the first Wonder Woman, that it was terrific.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So there we are.
Picked upstairs. I should have come and done this interview in it, shouldn't I? You know, for dressing up.
Sarah, it is something which we'll obviously sort of put for one of the highlights of 2021 to come.
So exactly. Wonder Woman housework.
Precisely, and we need more British Wonder Woman. You know, there are enough already, but what the hey? Let's move on accordingly. And indeed, it brought us around to the time where we can say, after getting a sort of modicum of agreement on that side of things, that I think Robin will be reviewing or looking at Enola Holmes from that point of view. Sarah, would you like to put those two questions to the team, please? Over to you, Sarah Huntley.
Okay, team. Yes, have you had an interesting link up?
I sure did.
Certainly have.
Absolutely.
Yes, has it helped determine what your watching is going to be? Or is it a case of, the heck with Wonder Woman 84, the heck with Enola Holmes, I'm going to actually watch an Amazon Prime football game between Burnley and West Ham United?
You know, it's actually quite funny. My flatmates and I, we like watch movies every now and then, and we spend a good half an hour to an hour wondering what movie we're going to watch.
We've done it for you.
Now, I have two. I'm ready.
Oh, okay.
So it's time for Wonder Woman.
Can I give you my silly joke? I used to do a murder mystery spoof of Sherlock Holmes, and I used to play Mrs. Hudson along with lots of other things. It's when murder mysteries were in, and you'd been for corporates and things, so people would know the story, and then it's sort of like, and how naff is this? This will give you a taste of how it started off. My friend Ian Bailey used to play Sherlock. And I asked Mrs. Hudson, he said, Mrs. Hudson, would you call me a hansom cab? And she goes, oh, yes, Mr. It went on like that the whole way through. But it was quite clever. And I do like that. Does it have that sort of seedy feel of the lurky corridors of London that you shouldn't go down?
Yes.
Yes, no, I would say that it does. I mean, it's very much... I was looking it up, Alex. I was right about the 19th century, and it's supposed to be set in Victoria.
No, it's 1900. Enola Holmes is 16. She was born in 1884. So on that, you see that in the end credits. So 16, it's 1900. There we are.
And Edward came to the throne when?
Okay, yeah, well, Victorian Edwardian. See, he was waiting.
It's 1902 when Victoria died, actually. But no, but this is terrific. And, you know, there is this period feel. It's all part of the escapist joy of it. And with a cast like this, I mean, also I'm looking forward to seeing Millie Bobby Brown again. And
in Stranger Things. Watch all three seasons of Stranger Things, Richard. You'll find it a whole new world.
No, I won't. I'll find it in a very, very different world.
Because it's on Netflix.
I've got time to do it. But I think also Louis Partridge, just give him a mention because there's...
The hair's too glossy, Richard. The hair's too glossy. Thankfully, he gets it cut halfway through the film. But, you know, other than that, it's too long. You know, anyway.
That's jealousy, Alex. I'm sorry, but that is unworthy of you.
So, Robin Pearce, Richard Fitzwilliams, Yaz Graf, and Sarah Huntley, I take it, will all return?
Love, oh, definitely.
Yes. Oh, well, cheers, Robin. Very, very interesting, Robin, hearing your views on this and the fact that, you know, we agreed more than I have to say I thought possible on
absolutely. Same here.